welcome back to another episode of Recruitment Journeys with me, Pete Watson from Mint R2R, Australia's longest serving rec-to-rec. Unapologetic plug there, shameless. Recruitment Journeys is the original and the longest running podcast dedicated to you, the Australian recruitment industry. In this podcast, as ever, we chat to hand-picked identities from the Australian recruitment industry about their career journeys so far, the highs and the lows, in the hope to educate, motivate, and inspire you, our listeners. Right, quick one before we get into it. If you've ever listened to this podcast, and dare I say it, even enjoyed it, it would be massively appreciated if you could quickly like, share, or subscribe, or all three. We don't ask for money. This is all we ask for. Finally, a very quick but a massive thank you to our brand new sponsors, A Positive Finance. Everything you need to start or scale your recruitment business, from contractor payroll, payroll funding, and Recruit Now Pay Later payment software. Right, that is enough of all that. Let's get on with it and meet our next guest on Recruitment Journeys. Ephraim Stevenson from Collar Group epitomizes the recruitment entrepreneur. In his 22-year career, he has successfully launched, scaled, and sold more recruitment companies than most of us have had recruitment jobs. His most recent and arguably most successful enterprise, Collar Group, is already in every state, 13 offices, it's got about 115 staff and almost 1,000 temps out. And the company is not yet 2 years old. But how does he do it? What's the secret sauce behind the growth? And what's the end goal for a company that has already achieved more in 2 years than most companies would achieve in their whole lifetime? Let's get into it. Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon, Pete. How are you, mate?
I'm all right, mate. Thank you for being involved. Wait, so you're up in sunny Perth at the moment?
Sunny Perth at the moment, mate, yes. And thanks for the opportunity to get involved, mate. Obviously been a big admirer of the show for many years, and obviously, you personally, mate, obviously you and I obviously go way back. So, yeah, very excited to be given the opportunity to jump on.
First of all, don't be daft. Secondly, I love the fact that you call it a show. it's just me and a microphone. Sometimes the microphone doesn't even work. Hang on, I'll just speak to my producer. She wants me to edit. Mate, listen. So, welcome back to Recruitment Journeys. It's actually the fourth series. This is the first episode of the fourth series. So we've been going for a few years now. This podcast is all about speaking to chosen recruitment identities from predominantly the Australian recruitment industry in the hope to inspire, educate, motivate, and just tell your story in the hope that somebody out there might listen to that story, any part of it, and go, that's cool, I'm going to do that in my life. So no pressure, Ephraim, but you are here to inspire, educate, and motivate in any way, shape, or form that you can. Can I start with a question that you might not be expecting? It's something I've always wanted to ask you, and I never have for some reason, because we've known each other 10-ish years. The name, Ephraim. Where does the name Ephraim come from?
Great question, Pete. Look, the name Ephraim originates from... For me personally, it originated from Jordan. So my dad was working in Jordan, and before I actually moved and lived in Jordan. And Ephraim, spelt with an I, is actually Hebrew, and it means fruitful. So the word Ephraim, even though without the I, also means fruitful. So it's actually a Hebrew name. And my dad was pretty keen on Ephraim and having something a little bit different and something a little bit unique. I probably beg to differ, certainly in my teenage years, mate, or at school, obviously got a lot of grief for a name, and obviously the abbreviation, obviously being F, well, you can obviously use your imagination as to, all the stick I used to get at school. But yeah, that's where it originated from.
So, okay, so have I been pronouncing it wrong for all these years?
No, it's Ephraim. No, you're Ephraim's spot on, mate.
Okay, cool. Ephraim, okay. Yeah. So, mate, I've already given you a little bit of an introduction to the listeners prior to hitting the record button. In your own words, would you mind telling the listeners, and maybe the viewers, if I stick this on YouTube, undecided at this stage, who you are?
Fantastic. Hi, guys. Ephraim Stevenson, the founder and CEO of Collar Group. Been in recruitment now for 22 years. Came over to Australia as a backpacker and fell into recruitment as a lot of us do, and never really looked back. So recruitment's been a great gig for me and something, an industry which has been fruitful, excuse the pun with a name, but a very fruitful career for me and something that I'm extremely passionate about. It's not uncommon for people to hear me say that I eat, sleep and breathe recruitment. A little bit wankish that I know, but ultimately, you know, I've just found my calling. I truly and honestly believe that, you know, I was set to be involved in recruitment in some shape, way or form. So yeah, 22 years in the game, mate. Obviously founded and co-founded multiple agencies during that time and kind of bringing all that knowledge, all that experience, all that wisdom, the wins and the losses under the Collar brand. And I think that's what gives us our biggest competitive advantages, to be honest with you, mate.
Yeah. And mate, you are, I suppose, look, the beautiful thing about our industry, right, is that it's set up, it's almost perfectly tailor-made for entrepreneurs, you know, to be a, you know, to start your own recruitment business in the recruitment industry. You simply know it needs the balls, some market knowledge, sort of network, and then, yeah, the internet, the phone, and you're off. You know, you don't need stock, you know, you don't need premises. You don't need fancy marketing. You can just crack on. So it is tailor-made for entrepreneurs. And you, my friend, you are definitely, you epitomize the recruitment entrepreneur. You have, as you say, quite a few notches on your headpost in that regard. But, you know, we're probably going to focus on Collar Group mainly today. I don't know if we've got time to talk about all the recruitment businesses, mate. No, we haven't got 7 hours to go through all of the businesses that you've created. Mate, yep. We're going to get into it. I'm going to try something new on this podcast series. May or may not work. You're the guinea pig. We'll see how we go. Can you tell us something about Ephraim Stevenson that not many people know?
Good question. One thing a lot of people tend to be taken back when I do actually share it with them is I'm dyslexic. So for me, when in recruitment, I think part of the reason why recruitment works so well for me is I have a system for everything I do. And the way I communicate to people, certainly via email, and you've probably seen this in some of my email comments to you, Pete, it's, you know, don't take it personally when I'm not writing paragraphs after paragraphs. For me, my every way I communicate by it when writing stuff is in bullet points. And it's just how I communicate. It's how basically my mind processes. Mm. If I get too engulfed in writing an email, then potentially it could take me, you know, an hour to actually write an email because I'm that self-conscious about rereading the email to make sure my grammar is correct. I've got the correct, as crazy as that sounds, that's probably the biggest time consumer for me throughout the day is actually, How do I write my emails properly? And in this current climate and in this current environment in recruitment, which is obviously such a fast-paced world, that's why I think it's just worked so well for me because, you know, a lot of the clients don't want the fluff. They just basically, ultimately, that how we articulate what a candidate does is on our candidate synopsis. So allows me to outline their skills, their experience, their attributes, their availability, salary expectations, reason why I think they're suitable or the team think they're suitable to join the business, all in bullet points. So that's what I mean when I think I've fallen into, you know, my calling. It just works for me. I'm better off on the phone speaking to people than I am certainly spending half an hour a day writing emails. So that's definitely something I don't think a lot of people would know and something that I personally struggle with day to day.
That makes sense, right? That makes sense. So when you strike me as a bloke who crams in a lot of phone calls per day and they're short, sharp, punchy, bullet-pointed phone calls. My conversations with you, when you call me, it works perfectly, if I'm honest. You get to the point, we talk about what we need to. There's a tiny little bit of banter and small talk, but then we're done and we move on. I love that. So you kind of communicate the way, I suppose, you write as well. All right, mate, thank you for sharing that with us. You're from similar neck of the woods to myself. I'm from Cumbria. You're from... Are you
Lancashire?
Is it Morecambe? Is it Lancaster? Is it Blackpool? What is it, mate?
Yeah, no, I'm actually from Morecambe Bay, and was born basically in Morecambe before we took our first travels overseas. So have travelled around a lot as a teenager, or certainly as a child and into my teenage years. As I say, Dad obviously was in Jordan, so we lived in Jordan for about 4.5 years. back to the UK, back to Morecambe, then moved to South Africa for 4 years, then to Zimbabwe, Harare for 18 months, back to Morecambe. There's always a draw card, back to Morecambe. And then basically from Morecambe, moved over here when I was 24 as a backpacker.
Why would you not want to keep going back to Morecambe?
That's what Funnily enough, mate, I'm actually there in 2 weeks' time and taking my little boy back to see his grandma for the first time. Look, Morecambe Bay, mate, I think you've spent a bit of time in Morecambe throughout the years. It's a very sleepy seaside town, and yeah, certainly in the 60s, 70s, had quite a bit going on for it. But unfortunately, the town has definitely gone down the pan somewhat. Obviously, a lot more investments going into to the seaside town over the last couple of years. Morecambe FC have obviously been doing pretty well in the football league, albeit not too well this season. They've just been relegated. So, yeah, mate, I think it's one of those places that, regardless of where you live, people know where Morecambe is for some bizarre and uncanny reason. You know, it's
mate, I've done a little bit of raving in Morecambe.
About
38,000 years ago. Mate, so and you once told me that you were a caravan salesman. So my obvious question I ask everybody is, how did a caravan salesman from Morecambe end up in the wonderful world of recruitment?
Yeah, right. Yeah, great question, mate. I mean, look, my background is, my first professional job was working for AXA Insurance, and I was actually working in the outbound call center for AXA Insurance, and I did that for 5 years. And that was my first taste in regards to sales, you know, hitting the phones day in, day out, trying to cross sell basically insurance. Certainly gave me the resilience and the confidence to, you know, I guess to not necessarily take a no. From there, I then moved into newspaper sales, which was face-to-face, B2B, actually selling advertising space in the Lancaster Guardian and the Morecambe Visitor, funnily enough. And, you know, again, I was out on the road, door knocking, trying to sell, obviously, advertising space. So I think that combined with the AXA Insurance experience, telemarketing, really gave me the good fundamentals to be a good recruiter. I traveled around Thailand with my best friend, traveled around Indonesia for about 3 months before arriving in Australia. Arrived in Australia, as I say, as a backpacker. I had about $500 to my name. I'd sold all my worldly possessions back in the UK. The caravan business that I was working for before we left, it was a great gig. It really was. And I mean, selling caravans doesn't sound too exciting, but we were actually working for one of the most successful entrepreneurs in that space. Story goes, there's a bit of a backstory behind that. But anyway, he'd actually built the most successful, basically, caravan sales business in the UK. And myself and Jamie, who was my best friend, who I came traveling with, we're both working for this caravan business. We both decided basically we wanted to go traveling. So we literally resigned, and 2 days later on a plane, obviously traveling. Landed in Sydney, as I say, and my first job in Australia was actually working on the Sydney Harbour Bridge. A lot of people don't know that, actually. And obviously, we were getting everyone ready for the bridge climbs. And at that point in time, a working holiday visa, you were restricted for only working for one employer for a maximum of 3 months. Mm-hmm. So I did my 3 months there before literally finding my first job in recruitment. And for me, the first 3 months being in Sydney, the intention was traveling around Australia, then going over to Fiji, Fiji over to LA, LA back to Morecambe. So being on the ground over here for 3 months, I actually met my now ex-wife. Mm-hmm. And she was also working on the Harbour Bridge. And obviously, that's how we connected. Kind of fell in love with Sydney as well. And again, you know, coming from Morecambe into the Sydney kind of, you know, big smoke and big skies. And it was just something that I absolutely fell in love with. So my goal then, obviously, after finishing with the bridge climb, was to find a job that would allow me to stay in the country long term. Mate, I'm not going to lie, I sent off about 50 resumes to all different types of sales roles, recruitment gigs. And out of all those applications that I sent out, one company came back to me. And the company came back to me is an organization called Atomic Consulting. Atomic Consulting launched in Australia, and I was one of the individuals who first joined them. And they're actually doing really well in China. They've got circa about 300-400 recruiters working for them over in China. Back in the day, though, in Sydney, there was a team of four directors who were involved in the business. So I approached them. Basically, they invited me for an interview, and the gig they had available was a telemarketer. Now, back in the day, Pete, you might remember this, obviously, fax machines. Sydney Morning Herald, certainly in Sydney, was the number one I guess, lead generation tool with their job feature that would normally come out on a Saturday. So you buy basically the Saturday paper and it would actually have the career section in there. My job as their telemarketer, fortunately for us, those supplements with all the jobs being advertised, even though they weren't supposed to be sold until the Saturday, all got printed on the Thursday night, which meant, depending on which, I guess, news agency you knew, and if you knew them well, you could actually get your hands on those leads on a Friday. So what I would do is I'd get the leads on the Friday. Bear in mind, all these companies are advertising, expecting basically to see their ad on the Saturday. No idea that, obviously, I was aware they were currently advertising for jobs. And I'd pitch them. I'd call them up and say, hey, we're a local recruitment agency specializing in banking, finance, specializing in insurance, specializing in property construction. And my job was to actually set appointments for their recruiters to go in and then actually sell the recruitment services. And mate, I was being paid $13.50 an hour. They were going to give me 1% of all GP that I generated on any of those client meetings that I was booking in. And again, given my background in the UK, the first couple of meetings that I organized, the recruiters were coming back going, not the best lead and not interested in using recruiters. You know, why did you waste our time basically going out to pitch? And I actually took that really personally, mate, because I was like, you know what? I know what I'm doing in regards to appointment settings really easy. So I kind of just pulled one of the directors aside 2 weeks in and said, look, appreciate the feedback that's coming back from the recruiters. Can I have it go at doing the end-to-end? Can I make the appointment? Can somebody come out with me? And can I try and pick up the work? And they're like, well, if you do, we can't pay you a salary for that. It would have to be a commission-only model. I was like, well, what does that look like? And they said, well, we'll give you 50% of all revenue that you generate. And that would be paid on a monthly basis. So I was like, okay, up for the challenge. Obviously, wanted to back myself again, wanted to stay in the country long-term. So my first month in recruitment, mate, I billed $39,000. I made two placements basically in my first month. I was the top biller of that business in my first month. And I went on to stay with the organization for 2 years, again, commission only. The team grew from when I joined the business, there was four there. Obviously, I was the fifth. My team alone grew to a team of 20 inside those first 2 years. But again, I was being paid commission only. Being paid very handsomely, again, 50% of all GP, they provided me with a hire car. I was the top biller of the business, as I say, for every month throughout the whole first 2 years. And I'd have still been there to this day. Had they, you know, commission-only model isn't sustainable, mate, as we all know. So bear in mind, their team grew to a team of about 40. I was the only person still on com only. And unfortunately, like most businesses do when they're in startup, obviously capital was a bit of an issue. So they are actually using my commissions to pay, obviously payroll some of the staff, which obviously did sit well with me. And in the end, that's what forced me to go out and actually set up my first business, which was design and construct.
Well, okay, wow. So that was that's interesting. So you started design and construct with only a couple of years recruitment experience under your belt. Yep. However, you had already proven to yourself, I mean, maybe you knew this before you arrived in Australia, but the fact that you took on a commission-only recruitment role in a new industry, in a new job, in a new country, the fact that you took that on obviously proved to yourself that you backed yourself and then you had some success. Is that all you needed to go and start your own recruitment company?
Yeah, pretty much, mate. And I think that and just a desire to do things differently. And I think, if I was to go back over all the agencies that I've been a part of, that has always been our number one vision, the number one goal. You know, he's looking the lay of the land, looking at who the, you know, the main competitors in the space. And for me, the market that I carved myself out of was property and construction. Mm. Now, you know, if we look back then, 2001, property and construction, well, mainly it was Hayes. It was actually a lady by the name of Louise Clinton down in Sydney who arguably had about 80% of the market share. As crazy as that sounds, Hayes just had everyone signed up on, you know, low margins, large volume. And one thing that I found really refreshing was a lot of these companies that have been so loyal to Hayes for such a long period of time were actually willing and happy to have conversations. And I think, you know, if we look at that time, 2003, 2004, 2005, well, some of the best brands in the world of construction and property recruitment were actually launched. You know, Giles and Dave were the first ones. They launched Constructive, yeah. You know, followed by, I guess, the D&B guys. Sorry, followed by the D&C guys, which was yeah. us, followed by the D&B guys, which followed just shortly after. Mm-hmm. Now Careers, we're similar about the same time as well. Redpath, again, obviously. So there was a real, I think also in that property construction space, it became so competitive over that time. And that's what made, I guess, design and construct so exciting about how can we do things differently? How can we look at, you know, the candidate experience? How can we look at the client retention? How can we look at, you know, the casuals, the permanent, the exec search? And that's what I decided to do, mate. I was very happy with my role at Atomic. I achieved some incredible success. It really came down to that. I just felt I was being, people were taking the piss, to be honest with you. I could actually do this better by myself without having kind of that reporting structure. And that's I guess, what I decided to do, mate. I backed myself. I had $5,000 in the bank, mate. But all my commissions were still trailed up in this other business that I decided to exit. I walked away from about $60,000 worth of commissions that were due to me, knowing full and well, if I'm launching the business, I'm not going to be able to see any of that. So it was a big risk. I'm not going to lie. There was a lot of sleepless nights and, you know, obviously kind of just scratching my head and, you know, struggling really. You know, you're on the phone, you're trying to BD and you're just, and this is where I was working for myself. You're trying to BD, you're picking up roles, you're getting offers, counter offers are happening, candidates are canceling interviews, you know, and you kind of sat there going, shit, like, should I be on Seek actually looking for a job right now, as opposed to, you know, just doing the same thing time and time and time again? And it was really just down to, I guess, at the time I was living in Pyrmont, which I don't know if you know Pyrmont in Sydney, mate, but it's Darling Harbour. You know, there's plenty of distractions around there. So for me to really make this business work and give me every opportunity of succeeding, myself and my then wife decided, you know what, let's move out of Pyrmont. Let's move to a place called Waitara, which is about an hour north. It's literally just on the freeway to Newcastle. So you couldn't be any more further out in suburbia in Sydney. And that's what I decided to do. We moved out there. We got a two-bedroom apartment. We turned one of the bedrooms into an office. And I literally just sat in that home office, you know, up to 16, 17 hours a day, mate, just working on the brand, working on the marketing, working on, you know, the EDMs to obviously to candidates. And that's what gave me the buzz. That's what really, you know, I'm actually starting to get some strong presence here, starting to get some really strong marketing, some strong brand. Yeah. And then, you know, I guess the likes of Design and Construct, we then went on to win quite a few awards. We won the best training in the whole of Australia, basically, which was a Recruitment International Award. We won 3 years in a row, LinkedIn Most Socially Engaged. So the reason why I'm just sharing that now, mate, is it's those acknowledgements that gives me the drive, that gets me out of bed every day to go, okay, I'm receiving this feedback from the peers or from industry insights. That's what motivates me and keeps me going.
Perfect. Perfect. So, okay. So you started to, so you and I first met when you were running D&T. Yep. I don't know, that was 10 years ago, whatever. Probably makes you feel old as it does me. You went from being a relatively new recruiter, certainly not a businessman. Can you just give us some basic statistics about how big D&C became? You know, how many states, how many staff turnover,
absolutely,
et cetera?
Absolutely, mate. So, you know, initially Design and Construct was small. It was me. And I was going to have it as a lifestyle business, like a lot of recruiters do. And it was, so 2001 was when we launched. 2003 was when I started to get a bit of a, okay, we've got a business now. We've got the foundations. We've got the structure. Let's go out and start hiring staff. So I actually went to market, basically hired two other recruiters. So then there was a team of three of us. Jamie Lewis, who actually stayed on with the business. He was there for a total with the Design and Construct brand for about 17 and a half years, all in all. So he was our first employee. And then we went from three to a team of six. So, you know, double the growth of the business. At that point, the GFC happened. So 2008, 2009, I'd literally just taken on three more staff. And in the space of 2 months, the whole industry literally came crashing down. So unfortunately, went from a team of six back down to a team of three. And we were actually having a lot of fun between the three of us. You know, we rode that out probably for about another 2 or 3 years until I then made the conscious decision, okay, I'm going to start ramping this up. And the next 5 years was exponential. We doubled our revenue year in, year out for those 5 years. We went from a small home office, basically, in Rushcutters Bay to opening our first office in North Sydney. We then opened an office in Brisbane. We then opened an office in Melbourne, office in Perth, office in London. So I was in the business all up for about 15 years. So one shareholder, one director. While I was obviously scaling the Design and Construct business, which got to a circa about, we had about 55 recruiters in the business at any one time. And again, but where where it kind of pigeonholed ourselves, mate, was that's what we did. But, you know, we, the business is design and construct. We struggled to really try and add on some more revenue streams to that. And that was always my end goal, to obviously to have my fingers in as many pies as possible, I guess, in the world of recruitment. And that's when I then started branching out and speaking to other like-minded entrepreneurs and, you know, the people that I have partnered with, you know, as a co-founder or basically as a founder of the business. They've all approached me, and that's one thing that I always will be very grateful for. And, you know, it's not as if I've gone out and been tapping people on the shoulder saying, hey, do you want to come into business with us? I've actually had, you know, people reach directly out to me going, love what you've done over there. Is there anything, you know, would you be interested in stepping into our business, like either as a consultant or as an advisor? So that's how the conversations would normally start. And then after those conversations, it's like, well, why don't we just do it together? So then, you know, obviously, as well as scaling the design and construct brand, we opened up in the UK, so Design and Construct Limited. We then basically launched 420 Consulting, Preston James, obviously, as well as some other entities, obviously, on the side, which was then the Building Careers brand. So obviously co-founding Building Careers brand with the investor who I ended up selling Design and Construct to, and then funnily enough, also selling 420 and also selling the Preston James business too. So,
you've been a busy lad. You've been a busy lad. And there's been many iterations of Ephraim Stevenson, and obviously the most recent iteration or adventure, journey, chapter, whatever you want to call it, is Collar Group, right? Which arguably, correct me if I'm wrong, but I work in recruitment to recruitment. It's my job to have a reasonable grasp of what's going on in the marketplace. And I look at what everybody else in the market is doing. I look at what you achieved with D&C. I look at what you have now, in such a short period of time, achieved with Collar Group. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it looks like it's arguably, on paper, the most successful enterprise thus far. Your business is less than 2 years old, right?
Right.
How many staff do you have?
115.
How many offices do you have?
13 now. We just opened in Manila last week.
How many states are you in?
We've got basically 12 offices around Australia in every state. Yeah. Some states we have more than one office.
Right. So that's staggering. That's staggering. Mm. How do you sleep at night? I'm not referencing any kind of guilty conscience that you may or may not have about any other elements of your life. I'm talking about how do you go to bed at night without noise in your head about what you have to do tomorrow?
Yeah, look, mate, it's a great question. And I can honestly say, hand on heart, that this has been the easiest startup for me personally. And what I mean by that is, because I've always been juggling so many plates, mate. And, you know, I guess, yes, being involved with, you know, multiple businesses, you know, working with high performing recruiters, and it's great, but it's also really draining. I mean, I look at my design and construct days, mate. I mean, you know, I was working full time in design and construct, as well as then basically, you know, helping launch obviously the other agencies, being involved day to day, being involved in the brand, whatever it is. But then also, you know, opening up in the UK, I was doing a full day Sydney time, and then, you know, come 6 o'clock at night Sydney time, I was then spending the next 4 hours on the phone to the UK, managing the growth of the UK. I mean, I took the UK office from a startup to a team of 12 inside 4 months, which we all know the UK market, man, that's a really hard thing to do, especially when you're hiring experienced consultants.
Yeah.
And I think because I was all just spinning so many plates and so many different reporting lines, it just consumed me, mate, honestly. And, you know, and I think, you know, looking back then, again, obviously I mentioned obviously my previous ex-wife, you know, we were together 15 years and unfortunately things break down sometimes, you know, marriages break down. And for me, that happened, which then put even more stress on me personally, as well as financially. I mean, obviously going through a divorce, going through a settlement is obviously a huge, it's a huge commitment. And when you combined everything that was going on in my life back then compared to what I've now got going on in my life, which, you know, the story behind Collar Group, mate, you may or may not know this, but the reason why Collar was actually founded was, so once I'd exited all the other businesses, myself and my wife were going to take 5 weeks off. Long story short, we're over in Hawaii on the Big Island. I was bored shitless. I was going to take 12 months off. 5 weeks into that, I was bored shitless. That's where the business Kona & Co. came from. So during COVID, I managed to scale a business called Kona & Co. basically to a team of eight. A couple of us only ever met once or twice. The rest was all done over Teams. I was asked to then go into business again with one of my former business partners, which was Leslie Delimi, and actually help her launch another high volume blue collar business. So the BCA brand, mate, we actually got to a 60 plus million turnover business inside 18 months. Leslie was critical part of growing that BCA brand. She then stepped out of BCA. We then went back into business together. We scaled Tailored Resources. I was scaling Kona & Co. at the time in Melbourne during lockdown. You mentioned before about my man bun. This is from Melbourne. The last time I had my hair cut on top was actually before the lockdown in Melbourne. So bear in mind, we're in the 5-month lockdown in Melbourne. Myself and my wife locked up in Lilydale. Only one of us was allowed to leave the house, 5-kilometer radius. The business was going really well that I was obviously a shareholder of over in Perth. And that's what we made the decision to then, I'm going to sell Kona & Co. I'm going to basically do a management buyout, sell that to James. James Toft basically purchased the Kona & Co., all the intellectual property, and ran with Kona & Co. Insurance. I then stepped full-time into Tailored Resources over here in Perth. Myself and my wife relocated to Perth. And 3 months being on the ground over here, we found out we're expecting. So on the Tuesday, we found out we're expecting. On the Wednesday, I've called a board meeting. I've then resigned as a shareholder. I've given back my equity. People think I'm absolutely ludicrous for doing this. We're doing 10 million turnover business. But the very next day, I launched Collar Group. And in fact, the drive from Adelaide Terrace back to my house is about a 40-minute drive. My wife had no idea that I'd just resigned, that I'd given back my equity. And bear in mind, the night before, she just told me that we're expecting our first baby, which has always been a lifelong dream of mine. Yeah. So for me, again, I wanted to back myself. I wanted to now create a legacy and leave something for generations to come, basically for my boy. That's all I had in the back of my mind. I had no idea how quickly Colour was going to obviously gain momentum. I had no idea the amount of talent that wanted to come along for this journey. I mean, again, mate, you know, from the outside looking in, we've got over 450 years worth of recruitment knowledge and experience. Mm. We've got close to about 150 years combined experience from the likes of Chandler McLeod and Hayes. Mm. You know, so when you're hiring those types of individuals and those types of leaders with that type of knowledge and experience, how can you not have a successful business? Now, again, the structure of this organization has all been no one person's bigger than this business. We've got a very clear no dickhead policy in this business. So, and what I mean by that, Pete, is no one person is bigger than Collar. And as an eclection, if we're all singing from the same hymn sheet, bear in mind we've got 450 years worth of recruitment knowledge and experience, proven billers, high performers, top billers in some instances, all singing and dancing the Collar tune. Well, that's what's made the business so successful, and that's what's given us so much traction. And, you know, I guess had us nominated for so many awards and, you know, being accredited as a great place to work 2 years in a row, being the only recruitment agency in Australia to go and actually spend, which is a huge commitment to us from a financial point of view. Mm. But to say that we are the only recruitment agency in Australia that is investors and people accredited, it's all those point of differences that, again, has made Collar the success it is today. I mean, we can even go as far as saying in 2022, Collar was the most accredited recruitment agency in the whole of Australia. So just going back to what you were saying earlier on in the conversation about recruitment and how, you know, for entrepreneurs out there that are really passionate about creating a brand, creating a business, putting their own stamp on it, yeah. You're right. There's no industry no industry that I've ever come across or recruited in that would allow a business to scale and to be seen as a major player amongst the likes of Chandler, Hayes, yeah, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's what's so unique about the current market at the moment.
Yeah. So, mate, you just said some lovely things about the wonderful people who are working for you, but you have to pat yourself on the back a bit as well and take some of the credit. You sound like, correct me if I'm wrong, you sound like you've been on a personal journey as well, fatherhood. You know, you've almost streamlined your life. You've made it less chaotic, less busy, even yep. though you're now building a massive business, a legacy for your son. So how would you say that the Ephraim Stevenson today running Collar Group is different to the Ephraim Stevenson running DNC 10 years ago? How have you changed as a human? Not necessarily a businessman, as a human.
Yeah, no, great question, Pete. I think, you know, look, I've got the utmost love and respect for Sydney as a city, mate. I had 17, 18 incredible years living in Sydney. But there is also the historic, I guess, recruitment life cycle. And I guess, especially on the East Coast, the champions lunches, you're going out celebrating, you're drinking every Friday. That big drinking culture is something that, you know, with my drinking, I either drink or I don't drink, right? So for me, I've had parts of my life where I haven't drank for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And then I've had parts of my life where, you know, obviously you start to drink and then all of a sudden for me, it consumes basically who you are external to work. It becomes part and parcel that every lunch you go on, every interview. And being over in Perth has allowed me to reevaluate basically what is important to me. Obviously, fatherhood, being a great dad, obviously being a great husband, being a great brother and all that. And it's allowed me to take stock of really what's important to me in my life. And certainly going on champions lunches, you know, flying over to Fiji or whatever, that doesn't excite me. It never actually excited me back in the day. And to have now more a new perspective as to, you know, what motivates me, what drives me. So I haven't had a drink in over 3 years. And in fact, just before COVID kind of reared its head was when I decided to stop drinking again. And the reason why I did that is I wanted to give myself every opportunity to succeed in scaling Kona & Co. So Kona & Co, again, hugely successful business in the short space of time that was involved in it. I then look at, you know, the Tailored Resources or Talent Co, as obviously Leslie rebranded the name to. Again, another hugely successful, obviously, story that I was a part of. We then land with Collar. You know, Collar, for it to be recognized as the fastest growing recruitment agency in Australia, for it to have obviously all the accolades. I actually won the CEO Magazine CEO Startup of the Year Award in 2022, which for me is arguably my biggest accomplishment and biggest achievement. Again, from the outside looking in, having obviously peers kind of, you know, acknowledge the success and all the hard work and dedication that has been put into it. Again, it is what has really shaped me to who I am today. You know, and I think recruitment as a whole has a big drinking culture. So for me personally, it's kind of doing away with all the noise and it's just focusing on what I do best and what I'm most passionate about.
Gives you clarity, right? I think, look, I've been relatively public about the fact that, I don't drink. And I'm proud of the fact that I don't drink. I'm proud of the fact that I'm relatively successful in recruitment without having to drink. And I think it just gives you that clarity. It just gives you that focus. It gives you time back because the amount of time that you lose through sitting in a pub or dealing with a hangover is immense. However, we're not here to talk about that today, but I'm glad you found that healthy path, mate. I'm almost scared to ask this question because by the way, can I just interrupt? I don't know whether you can hear. I'm calling you from Melbourne, right? And obviously, I suspect it's not raining in Perth, but it's thundering down above me. I don't know whether you can hear the rain lashing down. Good.
Can't hear it now.
If my four listeners can hear the raining, I apologize. It's absolutely pelting it down. Mate, I was going to say I'm almost scared to ask this next question because what you've achieved in 2 years is most businesses would never achieve in 20 years. But where do you see Collar Group going? Where do you see it scaling? And then I suppose I'm keen to know what your role will be. There's two questions there, but you know, do you plan to get it to a certain size? Well, you might not want to divulge this, but do you plan on getting it to a certain size and then saying, right, lads, that's me done. Thank you very much. It's been a nice ride. I'm gonna go sit on the beach. How's it gonna play out, mate?
So the growth of Collar, we will be at 1,000 daily contractors, daily temps by 30 June this year. The growth strategy is we want to be at 2,000 daily temps by the following 30 June. With our newly created government revenue stream, which obviously started in January, our aged care, healthcare, software and IT, the accounting and finance, our business will be doing circa $300 million turnover business within inside the next 24 months. which again will only give us two and a half to 3 years worth of actually trading from launch, which is just crazy numbers, Pete. Absolutely crazy numbers. You know, you then add on to the GTO, the group trading organization, which obviously, you know, we're offering apprenticeships, traineeships, our inclusion, our diversity, our indigenous engagement as well, and the indigenous part of the business. We want Collar to be known as the greatest generalist recruiter in the whole of Australia. And again, that sounds a little bit wankerish, a little bit egotistical. For those that do know me, knows that nothing further from the truth. Mm. It's just the opportunity that has presented itself with the individuals and the leaders that have come into this business. Mm. We all know that that's not just achievable. We're already doing it. Like, and again, if we look at, you know, where we've come from and where we'll finish on this financial year versus, you know, the next 12 months and then the next 12 months after that, that's where the exciting part really starts to play for me. It's, you know, I'm looking at numbers that are arguably your tier one to tier two kind of recruitment firms. You kind of step out of that SME. And as long as we can get the execution right in regards to the culture, our candidate experience, which is something we're very focused on as a business. And the reason why I touch on that is, you know, it's all very good and well having 2,000 people working for you on a daily basis. But what are you doing different to make sure that you actually retain them and that they're out there networking for you? They're out there basically referring candidates onto you. And that's one thing we're doing really well. And our network and our referral program is instrumental to our growth of our business, as is the grassroots stuff that we're doing. So South Yarra, you're in Melbourne, mate. We actually sponsor the Yarra Valley, basically local AFL. I think from memory, there's circa about 2,000 kids all running around with a Collar logo on every Saturday and basically playing AFL. Well, rule of thumb would be there's close to about 4,000 parents there. So we're getting involved in all the grassroots stuff to promote our GTO, our apprenticeships, our traineeships, grassroots cricket clubs. We sponsor the Western Force women's and men's teams as well. So for us, we want to, it sounds really cheesy, holistic approach to recruitment, but we want the Collar brand, again, to be synonymous, not just from a candidate point of view, but also from an internal attraction point of view. Now, mate, you're the best person for me to ask this for. Like, 115 headcount, but less than 10% of that have come through Rec2Rex, which I think is extraordinary, mate. Like, that is, we're on Thursday today. I reckon I've probably had at least a dozen people reach out to me so far this week wanting to join the Collar business. And I think that is something I'm so, so passionate about and so proud about, that everything we're doing, when you've got 115 people all singing and dancing from the same hymn sheet, all promoting Collar, what a great culture it is, you know, love working here, flexibility. They're the ones that are driving all this talent into our business. And it's something that I've never had an opportunity like I've got here. So if you can imagine, this is my 13th business that I've founded or co-founded, all the other 12, bringing all that knowledge, all that experience, under that one brand, under that one business. We've obviously got an incredible tier of senior leadership. So we've got obviously myself, we've got COO, we've got managing director, soon to be CFO. You know, we've then got a director running each of the states. Underneath them, they've got a director of revenue, associate director of revenue. So we've built our second level and third level of management really well. So to answer your question, in 2, 3, 4, 5 years time, what is my role within the business? My role will always be what I'm doing today, mate. Trying to promote the business, trying to attract obviously the best talent in the business. That's what I do really well. And if I think the businesses that I've been a part of over that time, like Leslie DeLimit, like global biller at Hayes, $3.2 million GP she billed in her last financial year. For me to have the opportunity to work with her in or out of Hayes and actually set up her own business, not just once, but twice, like, mate, there's no better sense of achievement when you're working with like-minded entrepreneurs and you just see how incredible they are. And for me to personally have the opportunity to mentor, train, and develop those types of individuals is next level for me. So, mate, James Toth.
Sorry, mate. Your passion is obviously off the charts, right? Obviously. Yeah. But I wonder how long it can continue. I wonder how long, especially given that I'm talking to a man who has, you know, he's now got, you know, clearly you're as passionate, quite rightly, about your family as your business, and being a dad is probably more important than being the CEO of Collar Group. So you're obviously a man who's on a, you know, personal journey as well as a business journey. How long can it continue? How long can that passion keep you glued to the recruitment industry before you, I don't know, I'm not suggesting you're going to burn out, but there's going to come a tipping point where How long can you carry on for, Ephraim? How long is this going to go for?
100%, mate. Look, and I guess that's what the foundations of COLA have been based on, mate. Mental health and well-being and burnout. Yeah. I've seen it firsthand. I've experienced it firsthand. And for me, that's what is so inherently wrong with this business, with this industry. I launched the business 29th of July, 2021. My first invoice, though, Pete, didn't go out until the 15th of October. Yeah. So those first 2 months was all about systems, process, procedures, internal, basically, well-being. And again, that's why we've gone down the path of 6 weeks annual leave. So the 10-day sick leave that, you know, are written into everyone's employment contract, we all know they're frowned upon if people take sick days. Well, for us, we turn those 10 days into mental health days, and we actually pay them as obviously additional annual leave. So they get 6 weeks annual leave. They'll get the week of Christmas off. Being a new dad, being a family man, Christmas Eve, first through to the first working day in the new year, that's additional annual leave. They also get the birthday off as well. So we're actually offering close to 7 weeks annual leave within COLA, again, to manage burnout. We also finish at 3 o'clock every single Friday across the business, Australia-wide. We want people to go away, enjoy the weekend, have a good weekend, obviously come back Monday. The flexibility, the working from home a couple of days a week, working from anywhere, as long as obviously the work's been done and they've got internet connection, we don't mind where people work from. The well-being, so hiring Amanda Stewart was arguably one of the most instrumental hires that I did. She was at Hays for 10 years before she joined our business. I also pulled her counterpart out of Hays, who was there for 7 years. So they both worked side by side for 7 years. Amanda was our director of well-being. So when you hire such an incredible talent and you send the message to market that your well-being of your internal staff is your number one priority, that's what people are engaging with. That's what people, COVID absolutely, Pete, has played a huge part in this, and we can't take any credit for this. What we're doing is going, okay, we're listening to all the noise in the background as to why people are unhappy with their current work, whether it's a large national, multinational recruiter or it's a small recruiter, everyone's going through the same pain points. All we're doing is addressing that head on and going, well, this is how we do things differently. Things like the monthly commissions. You know, we're the only agency that I'm aware of that offers monthly commissions with a no threshold target and that actually increases on revenue milestones. So the more money you bill for us without a target, the more money you're going to get paid. And we're also going to do that monthly as well. So it's what are the pain points of our candidates, our internal candidates, which is commissions. Are they getting paid commissions at all? Are companies making the targets? I was speaking to somebody yesterday, mate, that the person's on a 58 grand plus super. Mm. Their target every quarter is $65,000. They've got a 4x threshold before they earn commission. And I'm just like, you're making it easy for recruitment startups to actually come and take your staff, because that, you know, even in this current climate, everyone's talking about commissions, everyone's talking about salaries, everyone's talking about career, longevity. Well, that's what we're trying to do, but we're attacking it head on. There's nothing in this business that I would ever ask anyone to do that I wouldn't be willing to do myself. And I think, you know, I know that hasn't really answered your question in regards to me personally, my burnout, but mate, I'm at home most days by 3 o'clock. I've got my little boy in my hand basically at 3 o'clock. I'm up at 4 o'clock every morning. From 4 to 6, that's my most precious time of the day. That's me and my boy go for a walk, go out chilling. He'll help me write some job ads. He'll help me look at resumes, whatever. That's my time, basically, that I get to spend with it. But then, so I manage my burnout. I manage the amount of work that I put in. Having an exceptional leadership team around me has allowed me to be able to do that.
Good man, good man. I'm curious how your son feels when you wake him up at 4 o'clock in the morning to look at resumes. But
it's nobody the other way around. But yeah,
conversation for another time, mate. I love it. I love your passion. I love your energy. I love the story. I love the man bun. I'm enjoying watching from the wings and just watching it grow. Obviously, I'm devastated to hear that you're hiring so few people through RectorX. But I will tell you a little story, and I promise I'm not just saying this just to blow smoke up your backside, but I did speak to a senior recruiter and a few weeks ago, and she wanted me to talk to her about options in the marketplace. And I didn't know at the time, but she was testing me a little bit. You know, she wanted to understand my knowledge of the market, which is fine. I suppose that's my job, right? And I mentioned Collar Group, and she stopped me, and she said, "I'm so glad that you mentioned Collar Group, because they've been recommended to me by such and such, somebody that I really respect, and I was really keen to see if they were mentioned in your top three businesses in the property construction space, which they absolutely were. So that was look, and it's, you know, and it's lovely. It's lovely for me to hear that. It's lovely to hear that the Collar Group brand is growing out there. Mate, thank you. Thank you so much for your candor. What I want to do in this new iteration of Recruitment Journeys, I want to very quickly offer some snapshot advice to people who are different stages of their career. And obviously, I'm talking to a very experienced gentleman. And I wondered if you would be able to give me snapshot advice to these four people at different stages of their career.
Yeah.
If you don't mind. So here we go. Number one, what advice would you give to somebody in their first week in recruitment?
First week in recruitment, just enjoy it. And I know that sounds like a really lame answer, but you've got to be passionate about what you do. You know, if you're starting your journey in recruitment, it's about industry knowledge, industry insight, really engulfing yourself into, you know, the terminology of the industry, who's hiring in the industry, who's who in the industry, most importantly, who's recruiting in the industry. Now, I believe you can only really get the most out of recruitment if you're passionate about what you do. So I think for me, the design and construct, which obviously was my first business, the fact I was recruiting for property and construction, bear in mind, my dad was in construction, grandfather was in construction. I always had a passion for construction, but I was in sales, right? So how can you channel that? So I think that is a fundamental part in anyone's kicking off their career in recruitment. In the first week, it's find something that you're going to be passionate about recruiting for. Recruitment is the same across most industries. However, the personalities, the skill set, and the types of individuals that you're speaking to day in, day out will have a profound impact on your success as a recruiter, in my opinion.
Yeah, thank you. What advice would you give to somebody who's been in recruitment for about 2 years?
Yep.
But hasn't yet found their groove, isn't necessarily kicking goals. Clearly something's broken. What advice would you give to somebody who's been in recruitment for a couple of years and it's just not clicking?
Depending on who they're working for, ultimately, right? I'd be reaching out basically to the owners, to the leaders of the business, and obviously just explaining that I've come into a bit of a funk. I love recruitment. However, this is the scenario. But outside of that, I think so many businesses have limited resources when it comes to training, development, mentoring. Use your initiative. Like LinkedIn, come on, guys, it's 2023. The amount of money I've personally made from LinkedIn and the amount of brands I've launched from LinkedIn, I'd be using that. There's a really good, obviously, the Learning Center on LinkedIn. There's some information on there. I'd be connecting and listening to industry, you know, icons like Pete and obviously the podcasts, surrounding yourself with as many passionate industry leaders as you possibly can. And you'll find that a lot of these individuals, I mean, I get contacted all the time. People just asking, hey, can I have advice around this? Or, you know, what would you do in this scenario? You'd actually be pleasantly surprised how many people will actually give you the time of day you just actually sent them a message or picked up the phone and have a conversation with them. So I wouldn't necessarily think that that's the end of your career. 2 years in, and for me, that's just when my career kind of got going. It could be the culture of the business you're working for. It could be the sector that you're working for. It could be the team. Could be the business itself. Could be the brand. But if recruitment's for you, I'd be looking externally to that as to how you could get more help, you know, help, advice.
So maybe like do an audit of where you are now and see if you can identify what it is that isn't resonating. I think that advice is great. There's so much free advice out there. There's so many free resources available in this day and age, and people don't tap into them. You know, more people need to listen to more icons, as he points to himself. And that was the word. That was your word, not mine. I'm taking it all day long. Thank you very much. Mate, what advice would you give to somebody thinking about going into their first management role?
Yeah, look, I think this is probably one of the industry's biggest issues, isn't it? It's you know, too many people being top billers, promoted too soon into management positions, and then not really having the fundamental, I guess, just experience managing personalities, managing people. There's a whole HR component to that as well. Again, find yourself a decent mentor, a career coach. You know, unfortunately, in Australia, there isn't too many players out there. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to, you know, work with the likes of Mike Walmsley, kind of as a NED. I did time with Greg Savage. Surround yourself with as many people as you possibly can that is going to add value to your leadership style. But always, it's continuous learning. You know, you can't be the thing with being a leader is you can't take your finger off the pulse. And that's why all of our leaders in our business still built, because how can you expect somebody to really lead from the front, especially with technology changing, you know, ChatGPT, all these new, I guess, solutions are coming to the market. You really want to make sure you keep the finger on the pulse as close as possible. But to all the leaders that in our business, we say, just enjoy it, you know, embrace it, enjoy it. It's all about you learning as well as you kind of teaching and learning, obviously, your team. And you know, the good thing in your recruitment, no one day is ever going to be the same. So I think it's how you articulate that, you know, from a stress point of view, from an anxiety point of view, from the delivery point of view. Leadership's great, but don't get me wrong, it's not for everyone.
Yeah, I think I always encourage people to stop and think about whether they truly, what are the reasons they're doing this? Really analyze why you're taking that path instead of that path. Good advice, mate. And then finally, I feel like you might be qualified to answer this final question. What advice would you give to somebody thinking about going out on their own?
Do exactly just that. Go out on your own. Like, honestly, the amount of experience that I've had with VC, with private investors, and it's all great, and it's all, you know, it's all fluff a lot of the time, guys and girls. Back yourself, go out there. There's no one person that is going to be able to deliver the message to market and the passion, drive that each individual brings to the table. And I think what is so inherently wrong, again, with the industry at the moment, there's so much scare tactics on people actually going out on their own, and restrictions of trade. Let's talk about it. That's the number one reason why people don't go out, because they're too shit scared, because of, obviously, you know, potentially spending months and weeks in court. It doesn't always have to end like that. It doesn't have to be that way. My biggest advice to anyone looking to go out on their own is exactly that. Go out on your own. If you've got partners who's going to be in the business, make sure they're just as actively involved in the business. And they're also going to be adding revenue to the business. They're not just going to be sitting on the fence and coming along for the ride. Yeah. But it's really encouraging to see, Peter. You'll have seen yourself over the last 12, 18 months, the amount of new recruitment agencies that are launching. And don't get me wrong, there's some incredible, you know, shuttles to be able to get you there. The recruitment entrepreneur, you know, the Brilliant X guys and all that jazz. There is some really cool solutions out there. But for me personally, and again, the reason why I'm so passionate about what I'm doing at Collie is because I'm doing it all by myself. And I think, you know, today I can say, hand on heart, Collie is a one shareholder, one director business, and that's me. And nothing gives me more sense of satisfaction to be able to say that rather than say, I'm a minor, basically, you know, shareholder in my own business. And you know, even though it's my business, I've got to run every decision through, you know, numerous, basically, decision makers or red tape. And also, you know, when you do that, when you go out to external, basically, capital, you've also got to appreciate there's never going to be a heartbeat in the business. It's purely going to be dollars and cents. And rightly so, right? Because that's what they're invested in. But I think if you really care about what you're doing, you care about your staff and you want to maintain that culture and, you know, you want to be seen as a great employer in the industry, well, that's on you as an individual as opposed to, bringing in external teams around you.
Yeah. I love that, mate. What advice would you give them? Just do it. Just do it.
Just do it.
Procrastination is an absolute...
It's a killer.
It's a cancer, man. It's a killer. It's like
so
many capable people in our industry just... They don't even allow themselves to think about going out on their own. But you know that they will be absolute raging successes, but they just don't allow themselves to get there because they're just frozen by fear. It's such a shame. Not something that you will ever be guilty of, my friend. Efren, thank you so much, mate. Thank you so much for coming on. I really do hope this will inspire particularly young recruitment entrepreneurs out there thinking about having a crack and... building an empire such as yourself. You're definitely building a legacy for Flynn, mate. You definitely are. Maybe, I suspect you won't say this out loud, but to answer my own question earlier, maybe you're thinking, right, I'm going to grind this out for another 15 years. It'll take me to my mid-60s.
I'm 45, Pete. Come on.
All right. Well, okay. All right. 60, early 60s. The man bun might have been gone by then. Maybe. Yeah. Who knows? But then you'll just pass the baton down to Flynn, who'll be, what will he be? He'll be 17, 18.
Maybe
that wouldn't work. Maybe you're going to have to grind it out to you 75, mate, and then pass it down to him when he's in his early 20s.
Mate, you never know. But look, these greys are looking pretty good at the moment, mate. There's no, you know, just for men in this, it's all natural. So we'll see how we go, mate. But honestly, the team that I'm working with at Collet, I just feel so fortunate and honestly believe that the sky's the limit, mate. And I've got no intention of, you know, retiring or stepping back anytime soon, mate. And not even in the next 10, 15 years, mate, to be honest with you. We've just opened, obviously, in Manila, obviously, in the Philippines. We're going to Canada at the end of this year. So, yeah, lots of exciting things going that will keep you nice and busy for many years to come.
It's exciting to watch from the wings. It's exciting for the industry. And whatever it is you are drinking, mate, keep drinking more of it, pal. Mate, cheers, Evan, mate. Thank you so much for coming on to the show, mate. Thank you for coming on to the show.
Thanks, mate. Legend. Cheers, buddy.
Take care, mate. Bye-bye.
Take care, mate.
And that's another episode of Recruitment Journeys Complete. Thank you so much for listening. We really hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, it would be awesome and really appreciated if you could like, share, or subscribe. Or ideally, all three. We don't ask for much at Recruitment Journeys, just a little bit of support. Thank you so much again for listening, and we will see you next time around for the next episode of Recruitment Journeys. Take it easy.